Come all ye faithful. What in the world is a Unitarian Universalist church doing with come all ye faithful? But we are the faithful. I know it sounds strange for a church, for a religious approach to talk about the faithful when we don't have a dogma. We don't have a normative theology. But we are people of faith and faithfulness. We are people who, without a theology that we agree on, still have a faith that can move mountains. But in order to move the mountains, we have to get up. And we have to pick up the shovels. And we have to do some of the work. We have a great faith that our lives make a difference to the world and to each other. We have a great faith that what we do together will make this world a better place. And we come together in the beginning of winter to affirm our call to service, to the service of this planet, to the service of all of our sisters and brothers, of all the faiths that with which we try to stammer our sense of connection to the source of life, creation, and love. For about 35 years, I've used this reading. Actually, for exactly 35 years, I've used this reading and skipped 1 year. And one of the kids who had grown up in my congregation came up to me and said, "You may not skip that reading. That is mine. And whatever age I am, I need to be reminded." Christmas is for the children. How many times have you heard that said and echoed the saying? How many times have you used this saying as an excuse to justify half-hearted celebrations or coldly practical observations? But Christmas is for the children. Only the wide eyes of childhood can encompass its potential beauties. Only uninhibited voices can do justice to the ancient carols. Only those who love without limits can forget prudence and price in their giving. Only those innocent of guile can cultivate goodwill and contribute to peace among the nations. Only with childish credulity may we enjoy the Christmas fantasies, and only with childish intuition sense the truths that underlie them. Christmas is for the children. How true! But adulthood is an attitude, not an age. It is a matter of heart, not height. Adulthood is the social mold in which we imprison our spirits, that they may take on the forms of the real world and forget the idealistic infinities of youth. Christmas is for children, but let's all be children at Christmas. Let us listen to the old, old tales and cultivate the new hopes they imply. Let us laugh, sing, and rejoice with one another, forgetting the false dignities of age and the foolish divisions which have kept us separate from one another. Let's all be children for Christmas, in our church, in our homes, and especially in our hearts. For years I used as opening words the following: let us withdraw from the cold and barren world of prosaic fact, if only for a season, that we may warm ourselves by the fire of fancy and take counsel of the wisdom of poetry and legend. I think that we err when we look at our holidays and our holy days and give them the test of fact. Truths are much more inspirational to our hearts and to our lives. It's not a question of the truth versus a lie. It's a question of the music and the poetry that sets our souls aflight. We look at religious issues often and try to subject them to modern day journalism. Did it happen like that? Were there three wise men traveling about guided by a star? Was there a star? Can we find the Star of Bethlehem? Did it happen like that? Was there a slaughter of the innocents that a king decreed? Was Jesus born of a virgin? This is not biology or history. This is poetry. A rabbi friend of mine got into big trouble one Passover by suggesting that the Exodus didn't happen. You can understand why he might have gotten into some trouble. It wasn't even a Reformed temple. It was conservative. And he said, well, there's no archaeological evidence that 600,000 people spent 40 years wandering the Sinai. Even if Moses was a man and didn't ask directions, 40 years is a long time to wander in Sinai when you can almost see the Jordan if you stand on your tiptoes. He suggested that there wasn't the detritus that one would expect. 600,000 people spending 40 years, you'd expect a 7-Eleven cup, an M&M wrapper, some evidence, but it wasn't about the facts. It's about the truth. If George Washington had not cut down a cherry tree, but it had been a pear tree, the truths would not be changed by the facts. When we look at the wonderful stories in our religious traditions, and we see a Red Sea parting, do we look for the earthquake, the typhoon, when Jesus walks on the water? Do we look for the stones that he might have been stepping on, Or do we look at the poetry, at the imagery of why there are miracles with water, why there are miracles with birth? When we look at the story of the Hebrews being fed manna from heaven, do we say, well, it was breadfruit and it blew in on a strong wind? When Jesus feeds people with five loaves, do we say, in those days they were real loaves? Or, on the other side, they sliced it really, really thin. Hence the expression, the best thing since sliced bread. When we subject it to that kind of criticism, we are missing the truths beneath the stories. We're missing that the water miracles are about the conquest of chaos and the fear of death. We're missing the feeding stories are about nourishment, the living waters that nourish our souls, the living bread that feeds our souls, that those five loaves are the five books of law, that when we are looking at the kind of nourishment and sustenance, yes, we need bread, and we also need to be filled with music, with art, with poetry. If Michelangelo could have said the Pietà, he wouldn't have had to have hammered. If Bach could have said the B minor Mass, he wouldn't have had to compose it. We need all different kinds of channels and ways to take in inspiration, the breath of life that keeps us alive in our minds, in our souls, and in our bodies. The other night, a friend asked me about the story of the three wise men and why there were three wise men, and whether that was just a story, a happenstance. I explained about the three priests of Zoroaster, and that didn't seem to clarify the issue for my friend. And what it comes down to is that all of the parts of our stories in Hebrew scriptures and the gospel narrative are there for reasons. They're complex, going beyond just the surface stories. There are three, what we call, gets translated as kings, magi, plural of magus, magician, the root of magician, and they're there because the message that is developed is that this birth is something of universal interest. That from kings on high, from other tribes and other faiths, to lowly shepherds in the field, that people of different races and religions and classes are brought together around this birth, this story, this new beginning. And in a lot of ways, that's what we try to celebrate here. People of various religions and backgrounds, ethnicities, and ideas coming together at Christmas Eve to celebrate the miracle of new life and this life. The poem, The Journey of the Magi by T.S. Eliot, has always been very interesting to me because it deals with both sides of the equation, with birth and with death, as well as with the hardest of all, which is change. Eliot, a birthright Unitarian who became an Anglophile and an Episcopalian, an Anglican, but had roots in Unitarianism from St. Louis, wrote, "A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey. The way was deep with snow and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter, and the camels galled, sore-footed, refractory, lying down in the melting snow. There were times when we regretted the summer palaces on the slopes and the terraces, and the silken girls bringing sherbet. Then the camel men cursing and grumbling and running away and wanting their liquor and women, and the night fires going out and the lack of shelter and the cities hostile and the towns unfriendly and the villages dirty and charging high prices. A hard time we had of it. At the end we preferred to travel at night, sleeping in snatches, with the voices singing in our ears, saying that this was all folly. Then at dawn, we came down to a temperate valley, wet below the snow line, smelling of vegetation, with a running stream and a water mill beating the darkness, and three trees on the low sky, and an old white horse galloped away in the meadow. Then we came to a tavern with vine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door, dicing for pieces of silver, and feet kicking the empty wineskins. But there was no information, and so we continued, and arrived at evening, not a moment too soon, finding the place, it was, you may say, satisfactory. All this was a long time ago, I remember, and I would do it again, but set down this. Were we led all that way for birth or death? There was a birth, certainly. We had evidence and no doubt. I have seen birth and death, but had thought that they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here in the old dispensation, with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad of another death. Death and birth and life. It's about change. It's about going on a spiritual journey, all of us with all of our lives, and being willing to follow stars to wherever they take us. Being willing to examine our faith in ourselves, in our myths, in our legends, in our values, and to make them ours anew, and to make them ours by being willing to give all of ourselves to our new vision. and in gaining that new vision, to be willing to continue the journey again, because that vision too can be subject to change, to reevaluation, to new inspiration, to new birth, to new death, to new change, to new growth. Such is the cycle of the life on our planet and the cycle of the lives of our own souls on our own spiritual journeys. We cannot be expected to journey fearlessly, but resolutely. And that is courage enough. The world does not ask on Christmas morn about miracles and astronomy. It is too occupied by the love light from the glowing eyes of a little child. It is in seeing the miracle of love and singing a song of joy after a pilgrimage where we followed a star. Thank you. always love to do a Dickens reading at Christmas time because for most Americans and English, Christmas is very Dickensian, far more than any other influence on American celebration. We have a picture in our heads that comes from Dickens. And he was a Unitarian, and it is significant that when you look at the great Christmas carol that is so much a part of American Christmas celebration, almost as much a religious centerpiece as It's a Wonderful Life, that you have ghosts and you have goblins and you have chains, but you have very little theology. You have very little mention of God or Jesus. You have a sense of we forge our own chains in life. And we forge those chains, those terrible ghosts of karma, with our actions, our activities, or our inactivities. And we break the chains with our generosity. At the heart of Dickens is a sense of universalism, that it is our deeds. It is what we do with our hands and our hearts that free us from the slavery of things and of the dead end of selfishness. We open our eyes, we open our hearts, and we break the bondage of the past. Dickens wrote, "I have always thought of Christmas time when it comes around, apart from the veneration due its sacred name and origin, if anything belonging to it can be apart from that, as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable time, the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on different journeys." The theology of Dickens is really a theology of universalism. It is our hearts and our hands that ultimately reveal and serve our values. It is a sense of religion as religare, being connected one to another, and the sense that we share this planet with each other, people of all faiths, of all races and ethnicities, all different kinds of ideas, but our differences do not free us from our responsibilities to one another. And Dickens tells us that those responsibilities, if they are burdens at all, are blessed burdens, helping to humanize us as we work together to heal a broken world. For those who are here this morning, don't worry. I'm not going to do the 20-minute sermon on the call to the creche. But just a few words about the call to the creche. Christmas succeeds as a universal kind of holiday and holy day because it is essentially a birthday party. It's a party that celebrates the birth of Jesus, but the birth of every child, of every voice that cries in the night and cries in the service. And that's not to make anybody feel bad, because this is about children. It's not about us. It's about our passing the torch on to another generation and caring for another generation, reaching out beyond ourselves. There is something universal in a baby born vulnerable to disease, to people's lack of interest, to a world that turns away from its education, that turns away from its feeding and its care. There is a terrible vulnerability of every new generation, and it calls to decent people everywhere to come together and do that thing that is so apparently difficult for human beings to do. And that is to see beyond our differences to that universal thing that unites us as human beings. I've lived in the United States. I grew up in a Jewish household. I studied at a seminary at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. I'm, as far as I know, the only non-candidate for the priesthood ever to take Roman Catholic canon law from the Jesuits. I studied with the Franciscans, with the Anglicans. I lived in an Arab and Muslim country for 2 years. I've lived all over the world and encountered every different kind of religion. And we all try to teach at the core something that should be so easy for human beings, but it apparently is not. And that is that we should love one another. We should take care of one another. At the heart of our religious traditions are feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, pleading for the widow and orphan. It is a heart of compassion. The words most used in Islam are Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate, that we might learn how to be merciful and compassionate towards each other. At the heart of Jewish scripture is to do justice, not believe in justice, not think about justice, but do justice, love mercy, and the hardest of all, walk humbly with our God. That walking humbly seems to be so hard, but the core of our religious views are universal and universalistic. Whatever signs and music and poetry that informs our hearts, where our religion gets lived is where it is practiced with one another. And the reason that Christmas is so strong, is so poignant, is as it says in the Gospels, how can you love God whom you have not seen if you love not your brother whom you have seen? So I tell you, love one another. Okay, we're hard to love. We're grown-ups. We have bad habits. We've been traumatized. We had bad friends, difficult parents, teachers, all that. We're hard. It's hard to love one another. So maybe we need to look at children, at a cradle, at a creche. And because if we cannot make the connection to the baby, we are doomed. We have to be able to see in the future of a child, black or white or yellow or brown or any mixture along all of the spectrum of humanity, the same humanity, the same needs, the same dignity, the same rights, the same right to demand of our hearts real substance, real giving of real time and real caring. The creche, Christmas, the party, is the way to bring us in and to get us to look at the baby that is our future, that ties us from the past of forever we came to a future beyond our lives, but with the faith that what we do today with each other, what we do today for each other, has an ongoing action, positive action in the world that rolls on like a pebble thrown in a still pond, sending out waves way beyond its apparent points of entry and departure. We do not have to grandly or grandiosely save the world with big gestures, but with small kindnesses. Or as Mother Teresa said, it is not to do great things, but to do small things with great love. Christmas calls us to a small child. It calls us to a great love and an opening up of our hearts to connect one to another and from past to future through present action. The great Howard Thurman, minister of the Fellowship of All Peoples in San Francisco, built one of the first great interracial congregations, and he wrote this: "When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star from the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are at home, when the shepherds are back with their flock, the work of Christmas begins to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among our sisters and brothers, to make music in the heart." This is a time when we ask of you active love, not for this congregation, but all of our collection from this evening will go to FICE and to feed the hungry and the homeless in our own neighborhoods. Before we conclude with the what we're calling candle lighting, the safety candles, Cal OSHA got a hold of us, and there was going to be a Star in the East, but that got canceled also. I want to point out a couple of really wonderful things. This service, the heart of the service, is the Mighty Choir under Judy's direction. I talk about music and about poetry, and they do it, and it goes directly into us and informs us, and thank you so much for what you add, what you do, what you create. It is wonderful. And thank you also for coming to your wonderful board and saying, we need a sound system that actually makes music and doesn't have the tinny sound of a piano playing in the parlor. And thank you, wonderful board, for saying yes to this keyboard and to this wonderful sound system that really makes our services, bam, knocks it to another level. And it's just beautiful. And thank all of you for being here this evening and celebrating this beautiful evening with us. And thank you to the congregation. Both the Unitarian Universalist congregation and the temple have lost janitorial staff. So set up and take down and clean up has all been done by congregants. And thank you for your goodwill and your constant caring, because this really is the people's congregation. I work with you. You don't work for me. We are in this together, creating something of worth and of beauty together, giving each other inspiration and help during hard times. We come together as communities of faith in order to recharge our batteries, because we know that we depend one upon another for our ability to stay connected to the source of life and to the lives of all whom we touch. This now is our time to pass the flame. It's a cold flame, but I want you to imagine it as being really lively and dangerous. So if we could have some inflammable music. At Christmas, let me possess myself, be calm in mind and quiet in my heart. Let me take the time to watch the candle's light and know it is the same vast silence of the silver stars. Let me be of time dispossessed, stand at the birth and humbly say the name. Let me, in quiet, by the candle's sight, be akin to stars and lost in time. Be a disciple of truth's eternal life.